We're going to begin on the bottom of Daf Beis Amid Beis, Meisvei Mar Zutra. Again, we're raising objections to Rav Huna, who identifies R as Yom. And we're going to start now the Daf for today, Daf Gimel Amid Aleph. And we need a little bit of an introduction here, and that is that the Yoledes has an 80-day period of time when she gives birth to a young female girl, and this 80-day period of time is divided up into two parts. One part is what's called the first 14 days. Those are Yemei Tumah, and then from 14 up till 80, the balance are Yemei Tahara. Now, at the end of this 80-day period, she brings her Karbanos of Tahara. These are the Karbanos of Yoledes. So we have now 80 days that have passed, and she has to bring two Karbanos now. She has to bring a Karban Ola and a Karban Chatos. The Torah goes into great detail about the various laws of these two Karbanos. And if she has the wherewithal, the financial wherewithal, she'll bring what's called a Keves Li'ola, and she'll bring a bird for a Chatos. If she's poor, then she brings two birds, one for an Ola and one for a Chatos. Now, this halacha of Karban Yoledes, and that requirement applies not only to a woman who gave birth to a viable child, but even if she was a Mapeles, which means that she had a miscarriage, unfortunately. And the Gemara in Masechta Krisus established that if one woman gave birth to an Akeva, to a female girl, and then she became pregnant and she had a miscarriage within the 80-day period, then she brings one Ola and Chatos for both Leidos. Because during the time that she had this miscarriage, she still had not gotten to the point where the Chiyuv Karban emerged for the first Leida, so that the Chiyuv Karban only emerges after the 80 days. If, on the other hand, she had a miscarriage on 81, day 81, or any time beyond that, since she already had, there was already a chiyuv generated of a chiyuv karban for the first leida, which emerges on the 80th day, then from the 80th day on, any future leida, in this case hapala, would require a separate second set of karbanos. That is the information that we need as we move forward. The Mishnah tells us in Krisus, and this you'll see on the top of Daf Gimel Amid Aleph, Hamapeles or Lishmonim V'Yechad. What happens in that period of time, we'll call it the 12-hour night, which is after the 80th day, so she's already past the 80th day, but she hasn't yet reached daybreak, which is when you could bring Karbanos, of the 81st day. So she's in the night going into the 81st day. And on this, we're going to have a machlokas between Beis Hillel Beit Shammai, whether or not she brings a chatos and ola once or twice, one set or two sets. What is the status of the night going into day 81, meaning the night after day 80? And Beit Shammai potri mikarbon, Beit Shammai say that she's still within the 80-day period, even though technically she's already in the night of the 81st. And one pair of karbanos will suffice for both her original leida and the hapola of the night of Motzei 80 orally Shmona V'Echad. And Beis Hillel say Mechayvim, no, she has to bring a separate karban because she's already finished and completed what we call the unit of Yemei Tahara from the first leida once the 80-day period has passed. Amru lahem Beis Hillel Beit Shammai. Beis Hillel argued to Beit Shammai, Maishna or l'shmona v'yechad, miyom shmona v'yechad. I mean, what's the difference between the night going into the 81st and the 81st day itself? After all, in halacha, we have a principle that hayom holich achar laila, that the unit of a day begins with laila. The kickoff is at night. And furthermore argues Beis Hillel, im shiva, what would happen if she would see Dam on the night going into 81, the night after 80. Certainly, she would be Tmeya. It would not be included in Yemei Taharasa, because Yemei Taharasa terminated with nightfall at the end of the 80th day. Is Lo Yishvala LeKarbon? Why shouldn't we say the same thing, that now that she had Hapala on the night going into 81, which is already a new entity, the Yemei Tahara, the 80-day period has already passed, she has to bring a separate set of karbonos for this Hapala. But Mar Zutra, in his question here, is going to read meticulously the use of the word "ar" here in the Mishnah in Krisus. Midaka Amri Beis Hill Beit Shammai Maishna Ar Shmona V'Echad Mi Yom Shmona V'Echad. What's the difference, argues Beis Hill, between the night going into the 81st day and the 81st day by daybreak? Shmamino, we see clearly that Ar is Urtahu, that the word Ar means Lila. And this is against Rav Huna, because Rav Huna said that the word Ar means Yom. And it's unquestionable, the Gemara ends with the Shmamino, that we have clear-cut proof from the Mishnah over there that the word Ar means Lila, and this is the support for Rabbi Yehuda. Meisve, the Gemara continues to raise objections against Rav Huna. Now, the background for this is that we have to know that Shlomim is eaten not only on the day of its Hakrova, but also the night following the day of Hakrova, and the next day itself, until the second night. And Yochel Yehi Nechal Ar L'Shlishi, the Brisa raises the logical possibility that the carbon shlomim could be eaten not only day, night, and day, but also the following night, meaning the night going into day number three. And what's the logic that would compel us to assume that the night going into day three should also be included in the Achilas Karban Shlomim? Dinu. Dinu means that there's a logical reason to derive this. Now, what the Gemara is going to try to do is derive this from a Karban Toda. A Karban Toda is eaten on the day of its Hakrova and the night following. So as opposed to Shlomim, where you get 2 days and one night, in the case of Karban Tod, you only get the day and the following night. But the night that follows the day is attached to the day that preceded it. And therefore, since in Shlomim you eat the Karban even on day two, then the night following day two should also be included and integrated into the Zman Achila. Zvachim is a reference here to Karban Todah. Necholim liyom echad. Zvachim, we give them 2 time units, in this case, day and night. Those 2 onos form 1 unit for the achila of a todah. Shlomim necholim l'shnei yomim. Shlomim get 2 units of 2 days. Malahalon, just like in the case of todah, laila nimshach achar yom, the night follows the day. Afkan here too in Shlomim, Laila, Acharayom, the night that follows day 2 should be attached to the day that preceded it. Talmud Lomar, for this we need a special pasuk in Parashas Kedoshim. When the Torah touches on the Karban Shlomim, it writes, B'yom Zivchachem Yeachel, Umi Mocharas. So you get the day of the Hakrov itself, you get the next day as well, and then Vahanosar Ad Yom Hashlishi, it says in the Pasuk Veshti Sarif. Now the extra word Ad seems to indicate that up to the beginning of Yom Hashlishi, but not beyond, once you hit the beginning of Yom Hashlishi, which is the night that follows day 2, it's already Nosar, it has to be burnt. Nosar is the Basar Karban that passed its allotted time. Is Biyod Yom Unechal V'Yenu Nechal Li'or Hashlishi. You eat it on the day of the second, day number 2 of Shlomim, but not the night that follows day number 2. Then the Brisa continues and asks the question about Nosar. When exactly do we burn Nosar? If, let's say, you left over the Karban Shlomim till the night after day two, which means beyond its allotted eating time, do you burn it then, or do you wait till the next morning? Yochel yisarf miyad, I might think that as soon as it became nosa, which means the laila, the night going into Yom HaShlishi, which is the end of the time of achil, at that point already we should burn the nosar, and dinhu. And not only that, I have a logically compelling reason to assume so, and we're going to derive this from Korban Pesach. Zvachim, with regard to Korban Pesach, necholim liyom v'layla echad. So there's the day of the Akrova and the night following the Akrova. Shlom necholim l'shnei yomim v'layla echad. Mala halon tekef la'achila sreifa. In the case of Korban Pesach, immediately after the Zman Achila passes, we burn Nosar. Is Afkan so too in Shlomim, Tekef Liachila Srefa, as soon as the beginning of the night, beginning of day three, which means the night going into day three, and the time allotted for eating the Shlom has passed, immediately we should burn it. Talmud Lomar, the Pasuk says in Vayikra Perek Zayin, Vehanosar Mibsar hazevach b'yom hashlishi ba'esh yisarf. The Torah goes out of its way to tell us that nosar should be burnt on the third day. And the word yom means daytime as opposed to nighttime. B'yom atasorev v'iyat asorev b'layla. So even though the carbon, the basar carbon, became nosar already at the night going into day three because the time allotment is passed, nevertheless the mitzvah sreifa is not implemented until the daytime. Now we come back to be medayik from the lashon of the Brisa Mida Karban, since the Brisa says Yehi Nechal Or L'Shlishi, that we had a havamina that maybe in a Karban Shlomim you could eat the Karban even after day two, in the night going into day three, and that night is attached L'Mafreya back to day two, is Alma Or Urtu. You see that the Brisa used the word Or to refer to nighttime. Shmamina, again, we have another proof to support Rabbi Yehuda's contention that Or means night. Toshma, another proof that Or means night. Here's a braisa that says, Or shall Yom HaKippurim, the night of Yom HaKippurim, we call it called Nidri night in our language, Mispalel Sheva, there are seven brachos. Every yontif gets a tefillah of seven brachos, the three rishonos, the three achronos, and the middle bracha, which is called Kedushas HaYom. But the braisa is talking about the fact that this day of Yom HaKippurim is a day of tshuva and vidui. That's the essence of the day, even though the mitzvah of tshuva and vidui applies the whole year round, 365 days, but on Yontif of Yom Kippur, there is a special obligation of tshuva and vidui. And we will attach that vidui to every single tefillah of Yom HaKippurim, both in the tefillahs HaYochin, and again a second time for the tefillahs Hatzibur for the Chazaras Hashatz. Umisvade, which means that immediately after the Tfilah Sheva of Leil Yom HaKippurim, which is called in the language of this Braisa, Or Shel Yom HaKippurim, Misvada, he recites Vidui. Same thing again, the pattern repeats. The B'Shachris, in the morning of Yom HaKippurim, Mispal Sheva, Misvada, Musaf, Mispal Sheva, Misvada, Mincha, Mispal Sheva, Misvada, Ubi Arvis. Now, the Braisa goes on to a different discussion. A person, after fasting for an entire day, 24 hours plus, of Yom HaKippurim, he's ready for Ma'ariv HaMotzi Shabbos. It should be a regular Vachadik Ma'ariv, which is made up of 19 brachos. But according to the Tanakhama, this Bryce at least, a man is very tired, he's very exhausted, and it's a tremendous burden on him to recite the whole Shmoneh Esrei. Again, it could be that back at the time of the Gemara is even more of a burden because they didn't have printed Sidurim. It was a whole to-do. So we have what's called the Tfilas Havinenu, which is a short, abridged tefillah. What it does is it has the first three brachos, the last three brachos, and collapses the middle 13 brachos into one single bracha. And the words Havinenu, each word almost is a different bracha, really a collapse, synopsis of Shmon Esri. So according to the Tanakhama, this braisa, when we get to Arvis on Motzi Yom Kippur, Mispalo Me'ein Shmon Esri, instead of praying the entire long Shmon Esri of a regular Ma'ariv the whole year round, we're going to allow him to recite a Tfilas Havinenu, that short version, abridged version of Shmonesse, which includes within it all the middle brachos in that one Havinenu. That's the opinion of Tanakam. Reb Chanina has no compassion, and he says Mishum Avosov, and he quoting his Mesorah from his fathers and his earlier generations. Pal Shmonesre Shlemos. He should daven Shmonesre Shlemos. Now, it's not that Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel is cruel and he's insensitive, but he has another factor which makes it impossible to recite Havinenu, and that's Havdalah. At the end of every Shabbos or Yontif, in the Ma'ariv, after the Yontif is gone, we recite Havdalah. And in the case of Havinenu, there's no room for Havdalah. Mipnei shetzorach lomar Havdalah b'chonin adas. Now, when you recite chonin adas as a bracha, then we can recite Havdalah. And Havdalah was integrated into the tefillah of chonin adas. But when you pray a Tfilas Havinenu, which is called Me'ein Shmoneh Esrei, we don't recite Havdalah in a Tfilas Havinenu. And this is based on a Gemara Mesechta Brachas on Daf Chav Tesam and Aleph, that we don't have Havinenu on Motzi Shabbos, the Gemara says, because there's no room for Havdalah in Havinenu. And why is it impossible to mention Havdalah in the framework of Tfilas Havinenu? And the Gemara there in Brachos doesn't spell it out exactly why. Ein ze ela b'misha rugil ispal brachos u kol hashana, avol misha mispal kol hashana yudches shlemos im yichlu havdola b'avinenu titra daito v'yite ba. So the Ramban offers his own original explanation as to why the takana was not to insert havdola into havinenu. And the answer is because people would get all mixed up. You know, Havinenu is meant to be a short bracha. If you add Havdalah, it upsets the apple cart, and he might not daven properly. Alma, getting back to the question of what the word or means, or urtahu, we see clearly from this brisa that or, which means or shal Yom HaKippurim, the night of Ma'ariv of Yom HaKippurim called Nidri night, is called or. Shema Amino, we see clearly, or is Laila. Toshma, another proof, to Tani Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Shmuel had a brisa, and in the brisa it says, "Lately our boss are bodkim es hachametz lior aner." On the night of the 14th of Nisan, we check for chametz using a candle, alma or urtahu. Because when we compare our Mishnah to the brisa, our Mishnah used the word "or," and we'll see why in a minute. The brisa used the word "lila," "lel," but they mean exactly the same. And that's why we use an Oraner, because we're making a bedik at night, and the Oraner gives light at night. So we see clearly that Or, in our Mishnah, like it is in many other places that we prove from, is Lila. Ella, so the Gemara now retracts its original understanding of Rav Huna. Bein Rav Huna, Bein Rav Yehuda, Kuli Alma, Or Urtahu. Even Rav Huna agrees that Or is night. Velo Pligi, and they don't argue about when is the time for Bdikas Chametz. We mistakenly accused, false accusation, Rav Huna of holding Orli Abbas of Bodkimas Chametz means in the day of the 14th. Morning is when we're going to do the Bdika. That's not true. Even Rav Huna agrees that Or is Lila and the time for Bdikas Chametz is the night of the 14th. Elamar ki Asre Umar ki Asre. Each one uses a different word for Lila based on what was common in the vernacular in that particular location. Bi'asri de Rav Huna karu nagi. The word nagi was used in Rav Huna's gegen, in his districts, as a word for R. R was called nagi, meaning Lila was called nagi. So when Rav Huna said that the word R in our Mishnah means Nagi, what he meant was Lila. But he used the word Nagi because they used to call night in his area Nagi. Nagi means night. Not the way we understood that Nagi means day. Now why in that location did they use the word Nagi, which literally translates as day, to refer to night? Why did they call night Nagi? That's what we call a euphemism. And they wanted to say that the night is like day, meaning that even though it's bleak and it's dark, nevertheless, we still have the optimism and the faith of day. Ubi asrei de Rav Yehuda kari lo leili. But in Rav Yehuda's locality, they called Lila or are Lila. They used the word Lila. They weren't shy about using the word Lila. The Gemara asks, "V'tana didan my time alok toni lele." We have a brisa that used the word lele to refer to the night of Yudalid B'Nisan. Why didn't the Mishnah use the word lele? What pushed the Mishnah to use this confusing word "r," which might be night, might be day, when it could have been more explicit as it was in the brisa lele? And the Gemara now is at a crossroads for the rest of our study for today on Daf Gimel in laws that deal with Lashonos, how we use the language and choose our words very carefully. Lishna bi'alya hu dinokat. This is a euphemism. The Mishnah wanted to use the word "r" to describe night. And that's a Lishna ma'alya. It's on a higher level. And a person's level of sensitivity and sophistication and even his wisdom is going to be reflected in his choice of words. Sometimes we use words, we don't even think about which words we use. This entire Gemara that we're going to be spending the next 40 minutes on is all about how to choose your words carefully. Uke Rav Yehuda ben Levi, the Omer Rav Yeshua ben Levi, li olam al yotzi adam dover miguna mipiv. A person should not use language that's miguna. It's a little bit repulsive, if I could use the word. It has a drop of ich. It's not nice. Choose your words nicely. Again, I wouldn't say that if you use the word lele, that's a losha miguna, because the Braisa uses the word lele. But from the fact that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi mandates us to be very careful about our language, to always avoid losha miguna, we're going to derive the conclusion if all things are equal, we try to use the most sensitive language that we possibly can. And now we're going to embark upon a proof to establish that the Torah itself is allergic and avoids any sort of Lashon Maguna. Shari Akam HaKasuv Shmona Osios. We know that every letter in the Torah is precious. The Torah doesn't throw out letters just like that. And yet the Torah adds 8 letters in order to avoid a Lashon Maguna. V'lohotzi Dover Maguna V'yoshed Nemar. And now we look at the description of which animals went into the Teva. In Brachos Perek Zayin, it says, "Mina behema tohora, mina behema sher einena tohora." You would have said it should have used the word "tamei" to refer to those animals that we are enjoined from eating. But the Torah avoided the word "tmeya" because, relative to the word "asher lo tar," "asher einena tohora," it's, what shall I say, a lashon maguna. Again, relatively. And therefore, instead of Hatmeo, which has 5 letters to it, Asher Einena Tahora has 13 letters. We added an extra 18 letters. Eight letters, sorry. Rapapa Artesha. Rapapa says, I have another parasha where the Torah, in order to avoid the word Tamei, added no less than 9 letters, an extra 9 letters. Shenemar, this is the parasha in Kitetze of what's called a Balkeri. And it says, Ki yeh b'cha ish asher lo yeh tar mikre laila. And the Torah says that he has to go chutz l'machna shechina, he can't go into the Mikdash. And look at the language. Instead of saying, ish asher yeh tamei, and tamei is made up of only 3 letters, it says, asher lo yeh tar. And that means the Torah added 12 letters. In other words, in addition to 3 letters, it added an extra 9 letters. Ravin Omer Eser, I have a proof that the Torah, in order to avoid Tamei, in that very same pasuk that you quoted, Rav Papa, actually added 10 letters. Why? Because Havav Ditar, the Vav of the word Tar, is also extra. it's written male and not chaser. So if we calculate the word tahar as four letters, and then we add the other asher, right? Lo yeh tahar, then we end up with 10 extra letters. Rav Acha bar Yaakov Amar, I have a source for sheshes, right, that the Torah added as much as 16 extra letters. And now we're fast-forwarding to the Navi Shmuel. Shenemar ki omar mikrehu. Now, the background for this pasuk, if you're interested, is that David HaMelech was invited by Shaul HaMelech to join in a very intimate Su'udas Rosh Chodesh, and David didn't show up. So Shaul was trying to wonder why David did not take the invitation seriously. It must be that he had some sort of tumah. Tumah meaning he had a mikra lila, which we call a balkeri. And the pasuk says, ki omar mikrehu bilti tar hu ki lo tar. If you count up the number of letters when he could have said mikra tamehu, you'll find that he added all of 16 letters here in order to avoid mikra tamehu. Tanya de Bei Rabbi Yishmael, Liolam Yisaper Odom Loshen Nekiya. And Rabbi Yishmael is going to tell us that we derive from a word which the Torah is allergic to, which is called Merkav when it refers to a woman, because yeshiva means you sit down. But merkav means she wraps her legs around an animal or whatever it is. And the Torah avoids that word merkav. It conjures up an association of something that's a dara maguna. Sherei bezov, karo merkav. With regard to a male who has re'ios of a zav, he has three re'ios, he's a zav, and the Torah says merkav. I'll read to you the pasuk. It says, v'chol ha-merkav asher yirkav olav ha-zav tome yitma. So the Zav is riding an animal, and it's called Merkav. But now we have a female Zav, which is called the Zava. And there the Torah says, Ve'isha karo Moshav. It says, O al hakli asher hi yosheves olav. It doesn't say rocheves olav. The word Merkav is avoided. And instead it says yosheves. Despite the fact that Merkav of a Zav and Moshav of a Zava are exactly identical. As far as the halacha is concerned, they both have the same dinim of tumah v'tara. But nevertheless, the Torah wanted to avoid the word rechiva when it comes to a woman. The omer. And we have another pasuk. Now, the Gemara is going to try to understand why Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel feels compelled to add another pasuk and even a third pasuk. They've already proven very conclusively that from the fact that the Torah avoided the word merkav in the case of a zava, that a person should always be mesaper b'loshen nekiya. Look for the cleanest language that you possibly can. So we're going to have to ask in just one moment, if you hang in there, why Tana Devei Yishmael adds two psukim, both of which come from Sefer Iyov. The first pasuk says, v'tivchar loshon arumim. Now, amongst Iyov's buddies, he had one buddy by the name of Eliphaz, and another one by the name of Elihu. And first we have the statement of Eliphaz. And the friends of Iyov are warning him that he has to be careful about what words come out of his mouth. Iyov had so much catastrophe. And v'tivcha loshon arumim. Arumim means the sharp ones, those who are cunning. That's an allusion to chachamim. And the Lashon of Arumim means that we should always choose the language that's nekiya, that's absolutely clean, like the Chachamim do. The Omer, and furthermore, again, now that we put Eliphaz's statement on the table, now we get to Elihu's statement to Iyov, Vidas Sfasai Borur Milelo. Borur means to choose. And what it means is that when you have something of das, you have something of intelligence, then your lips should choose milelo, words that are clean, absolutely clean. So the Gemara immediately asks, my vi omer, why did the Braisa feel it necessary to add to Zava, meaning the avoidance of the word Merkav in Zava, these two psukim? And the answer is V'chitema, you might have said that don't derive any conclusions from Zava, because Hani Mili B'daraisa, the Torah is given straight from God's mouth. And therefore, when it's Mipia Gvura, obviously God is going to use the most clean language and avoid any sort of gnai. Avol b'derabanan, maybe when we get to the language of Chazal, of Mishnayos and Brises and Sifras and Sifris and Toseftas and so forth, lo, we don't have to be so careful. Hashem is the perfect being. He has to use the perfect language. But we, Chachamim, we don't have to use the Toshma. That's wrong, because v'yomer v'tivchar loshen arumen. You must, and arumen is a reference to the Chachamim, you must choose the right language. Loshen nekiya, the cleanest language. Now we have another pasuk. Why v'chitem, and if you'll argue, hanimili b'drabanan, maybe when the Chachamim are transmitting words of Torah, that's Torah Shebal Peh. And that Torah Shebal Peh, which is part of the transmission of Torah, has to be with Loshen Nekiya. Avol b'mili d'alma, but what happens if we're just talking about the weather conditions outside? Or how many people contracted the virus, right? In that case, lo, I don't need to be so careful about a Loshen Nekiya. The Omer, and therefore we quote the second pasuk, and that's the statement of Elihu. He says to Eov, Das Fosai Bor Milelo. Das Fosai means that everything that comes out of my mouth, every dibur that I vocalize and I enunciate, should be as a result of Borer. Borer means Borer. You chose a Lashon Nekiya. Sfasai, says the Marsha, is mashma af b'mili di alma. So Lashon Arumim is mili de chachamim, that's chachma and Torah. But the word sfasai, that's a generic, all-inclusive word that refers to even mili di alma, even if we're talking about today's weather conditions. Now the Gemara objects, ube'isha loksiv ba merkav? I'm going to prove to you, from Tanakh, from Breishis, that the word merkav is used to describe a woman. Vaksiv, now this is the time after Rivka left her father Basul's house. She goes with Eliezer to get married to Yitzhak, and the pasuk says, Vatokom Rivka v'narosel v'terkavna al hagmalim. She rides the camels. So you see that the word terkavna, which is another conjugation of the word merkav, is used with regard to a woman. In fact, with regard to all the women that were included in the entourage of Rivka. Hasam mishum b'yisusa d'gmalim orchehi. The Gemara says that a camel, because of its height, is a very precarious kind of ride. You know, it's very easy in Chas V'Shalom, if you fall off a camel, you know, it's a long way down. Very dangerous. So therefore, the word merkav or terkavna, in the context of a woman riding a camel, is perfectly appropriate. Why? Because she has to wrap her legs around the camel, and the Torah wants to emphasize that for safety purposes. The Gemara asks, Vaksiv, what about a pasuk in Shmos? It says, Vayikach Moshe es ishto ves bono vayarkivem al hachamor. Now we're talking about a donkey. A donkey is not a high, dangerous animal to ride. So then, why does the Torah use the word vayarkivein, which is again another conjugation of the noun of merkav, to describe ishto, that Moshe Rabbeinu's wife, Tzipporah, she's riding on a donkey? Hasam, says the Gemara, and here we turn to the Daf Gimel Amud Beis, mishum banav urchahu. Since the word merkav is very common with regard to males, there's no inhibition about using that word with regard to males. So here, that Moshe Rabbeinu was putting both his wife and his children, male children, on top of the mule. Therefore, the word terkav is appropriate. The Gemara asks, v'haksiv, I'm going to show you that the word merkav is used with regard to a woman, and exclusively a woman, meaning there's no one else riding the animal, the donkey. And now we're turning to a parsha in Shmuel, Sefer Shmuel. There was Avigail, who was married to Nabal HaKarmeli. And Nabal HaKarmeli had done something terrible, and David HaMelech was after him. And she was also trying to run away. She also had a fear of David HaMelech. And the pasuk says, "V'ayah hi rocheves al hachamar." She was riding a donkey. And the rest of the pasuk says, "V'yoredes b'seiser ha'ar." And she actually had an encounter with David HaMelech. This is a very scary kind of situation. The Gemara wants to know, how could the word Rocheves be used? That's not a Lashon Nekiyah with regard to a woman. And the Gemara answers, Hasam. Number of answers, three answers the Gemara is going to offer you. Mishum bi'isusa. All three answers are based on this concept of Mishum bi'isusa. Meaning that there were certain reasons why she was in a state of fright, and riding a mule becomes similar to riding a camel. So that although a mule in general is not a very dangerous animal to ride, and you don't have to wrap your legs around the mule, and the Torah didn't have to emphasize that, but in this situation of Avigail, for one of three reasons, she had to wrap her legs around the mule tight because there was danger. First reason, Delilah. The whole episode, according to this answer in the Gemara, took place at night. And Urchehu, it's really recommended that she wrap her legs around the mule because at night there's a fear of night for many reasons. You know, you could fall into, you know, ride into a hole. V'bois Amor Mishum Bisusa Delelelek, even if I agree that maybe this episode of Avigail did not take place at night, but Mishum Bisusa de David Ika. She was really afraid that David HaMelech was coming to wipe out the entire household of Nabal. Right? Nabal was the one who was guilty. David HaMelech had asked for something and he refused it. And now David HaMelech is coming to avenge this terrible thing that Nabal had done. And she was afraid that maybe David HaMelech would, without any discretion, he would wipe out the entire base Nabal. So therefore, she sat very tensely on the chamar and wrapped her legs around it. A third answer, by saying, "Be susa to David nami lek." Even if she wasn't afraid that David might destroy the entire base Nabal, but nevertheless, "Me should be susa de har ika." The pasuk says explicitly that she was riding on a mountain. And when you ride on a mountain and it goes up and down, it's very dangerous, even if you're riding a mule, and therefore she had to wrap her legs around it. That's the Lashon of Merkav, which in the case of Bisusa is the normal and recommended way of riding an animal for a woman, and therefore it's not a Lashon Meguna. Now, before we had a whole calculation of how the Torah avoided the word Tame or Tmea, and instead it added 8 letters, 10 letters, all the different calculations. So the Gemara asks, "Ubaraisa miloksiv tameh? Do you think the Torah is allergic to the word tameh?" That's not true. There are many, many psukim in which the Torah actually used the word tameh. So you're going to have to reformulate your principle that the Torah, in order to teach us that we have to be very careful about our choice of language, avoided the word tameh. Ella, let's reformulate it thusly. Kol hecha dechi hadadi ninu. If you have two Lashonos, and they have the same identical number of letters, and you have to choose one over the other, Mishtoi, Beloshanakiyah, make sure that you choose a clean language. But Kol Hechid and Efishin Mili, if you have to make a choice between A or B, A is a Loshanakiyah, but it has many more letters, or B is a Loshan She'eno Kol Kachnakiyah, it's a little bit of Gnai, but it has shorter letters, then Mishtoi B'Loshon Ketzara, then the Torah will advocate using the shorter language. And that means that when we transmit Torah, we have two dimensions. Number one is the dimension of the words themselves, and those have to be chosen carefully. And number two, we need what's called Loshon Ketzara. Chazal understood that when one teaches and transmits Torah, he should be very stingy, should be very abridged about his use of language. If you use long, verbose language, then the Talmidim lose concentration. Nowadays, for example, we have something called a video of 2 minutes. I don't know if you've ever seen such a video. But that's because of this Gemara here. Ken Omer Rav Huna Marav, Amri Le Omer Rav Huna, Omer Rav Mishum Rabbi Meir, Li Olam Yeshana Odom Le Talmido Derech Tzara. Then when we transmit Torah to our students, we should use short language because that's easier for them to follow and to remember, and therefore avoid, if you can, a Lashon Arucha, a longer language. So therefore, the Gemara says that there seems to be many different rules and regulations here, whether we should go for the shorter words that have less letters, we should go for the longer words to avoid Lashon Maguna. So the Gemara says, Kol Hecha Dechi Adadi Ninu Mishtoi B'Lashon Kavod. So if you take a look at the choice of these two words, Rocheves and Yosheves, they both have the exact number of 5 letters. And you're telling me that in such a case, we should be using the language of Yosheves, which is more sensitive, we call it in Yiddish edel, than a language of Rocheves. And yet it says Yosheves. So the Gemara answers, and now referring to the Pasuk in Shmuel Aleph with regard to Avigail. And the Pasuk says, he Rocheves. The Gemara says, Rocheves Ksiv. It doesn't say Rocheves with a Vav, but rather it says Rocheves without a Vav. Yosheves is with a Vav. Rocheves is without a vav. So therefore, since Rocheves has 1 less letter than Yosheves, therefore we will choose Rocheves. The Gemara now tells a story about how important it is to use the right language. Hanu trei talmidi de aviyasvi kami de rav. There was 2 students that were sitting at the feet of Rav. Chad Omar. Now, they were both quite exhausted by the sugya that Rav was teaching. And the question is, how do you express in metaphoric language, how do you express the fact that you're exhausted by the sugya? The sugya was overwhelming. You know, you learned the sugya in Erev. Chad Omar once said, this is how he expressed himself, Shavisinan lahay shmaita kidover acher misankan. Now, misankan is a word that indicates yigia, meaning you're exhausted. Dover acher is a reference to, pardon the expression, a swine, which is not even called a swine in the Gemara's language, they called it a dover acher. And he compares the situation that he finds himself in at the end of this sugya, his exhaustion, to the exhaustion of a pig. The Chad Omar, the other one, was much more anal in his choice of language. Shavasinu Aishmaita, this Shmaita made me into a Gdi Masankan, an exhausted goat. V'lo Ishtoi Rav Bahadi Dehech. And the first guy was now, so to speak, in Cherim. Rav didn't want to deal with him. According to some of the Mefarshim, he didn't speak to this Talmud for 30 days because the Talmud compared his exhaustion to that of a swine. Hani trei Talmidi de Avi Yasvei Kami de Hillel. And some say, Chad Minai, one of them was none other than Rabbi Yochim and Zakei Amrile. Others say that these 2 Talmidim were in front of Rebbe, Rabbi Yehuda Nosi, v'chad minayu hayu Rabbi Yochanan. So not sure if it's a story about Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai sitting in front of Hillel, or a story about the Amora Rabbi Yochanan sitting at the feet of Rebbe. So there were 2 Talmidim. One is anonymous, and the other is Rabbi Yochanan. Chad Omar, one of the Talmidim expressed himself, and he said, "Mipnei Bab Botzrim Bitara v'ein Moskin Bitara." One of them, which we know is going to be Rabbi Yochanan, He said, why is it that when we cut down the grapes, that's called Betziras Anovim, we harvest the grapes, we do so in Kelim Tahorim, and when we get to Zesim, which is called Mesika, to cut down the olives, Ein Moskim Betara, we're not makpid to use Kelim Tahorim. And this is all a reflection of a Gemara, a Brisa, Masechta Shabbos Daf Yud Zayin, about Ein Ha'ochlin Nitme'im Belo Sheyuchsheru LeKabel Tumah. We need one of the machshirim, one of the seven liquids, to fall on something before it's susceptible to tumah. And this is based on a pasuk in Parsha Shmini, Vayikur Aleph. Now, the moel, the liquids that come out of Zesim at the time of Masika, are not considered a machshir. It's not one of the seven machshirim, so it's not makabel tumah. But yayin that comes out of Anovim at the time of Betzira is considered a machshir. It's a mashke that makes the Anovim susceptible to Kabbalah's tumah. So therefore, when it comes to Betzira, which is Anovim, and the liquid that comes out of the Anovim, the grape juice, is a mashke that's machshir, is bekelim tahorim, we have to make sure that we use kelim tahorim. So it shouldn't contract tumah from the kli itself. And we don't have to be careful in the case of zeisim, because the liquid that comes out of the zeisim, which is called moel, is not considered one of the seven mashkin. But look how careful he is about his use of language. He says, ein moskim vitara. We will not be careful and demand and require that the kelim be vitara. Chad omer, another Talmud was not so edel about his choice of language. Omar, mipnei ma botsim vitara, moskim bituma. He uses the word tuma instead of avoiding it. Omar Sahil said that with regard to the person who avoided the use of the word tmeya, and instead he said v'ein moskim v'tara, muftach ani shezeya mora hora b'Yisrael. I know that his choice of language was so well thought out, and it was such a decision that he made, weighing every word, he's going to be a mora hora. He's going to be a transmitter of Torah, because in the transmission of Torah, the choice of language is very critical. And the story ends on a happy note. Lo hay yomim mu'atim achahora hora v'Yisrael. And in fact, this promise of either Hillel or Rebbe, depending upon different versions, came to pass in a very short period of time. Another story about choice of language, Hanu Tlosa Kani. A story of three Kohanim that were serving in the Beis HaMikdash. And they were dividing up the Lechem HaPonim. Now the Lechem HaPonim were 12 loaves, and on Shabbos, when they replaced last week's loaves with the new fresh loaves, they divided up the 12 loaves of bread amongst the Anshei Mishmar, amongst the Kohanim, who were serving in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, 12 loaves for the Anshei Beis Av is not going to give too much bread to each person. So the Kohanim had each one had a different way of expressing himself as to what was the size of the portion of Lechem HaPonim that he received. Chan Amar Lehu, one said, Higiani Kipul. Chan Amar Higiani Kizayis. Chan Amar Higiani Kizonov Halito. Notice, the first two Kohanim were very sensitive about their choice of language. One said, I got the size of a bean, a pool. This is a legume. The other said, I got the size of an olive. But the third one said, I got the size of a lizard's tail. Bodku Acher, they checked him out to see maybe his genealogy is not really so good. Maybe he paid his local rabbi, so to speak, $500 to make him into a Kohen. And Matsubo Shemitz Psul. They found that there was some mixture in his family of Psul, which means what we call Chalolus. And a Chalol is a child that's married to a father who's a Kohen, who's illegitimately married to a woman that he's not allowed to be married to. And in that case, the child is not allowed to serve as a Kohen HaOved beBeis HaMikdash. So the Gemara is not happy with the fact that they checked out a Kohen who was serving in the Beis HaMikdash and they discovered a psul. Why? V'atnan, we have a Mishnah in Kiddushin. The last parak of Kiddushin, which is called Asar Yuchsin, is all about genealogy. And a man marries a woman, and the Mishnah establishes that he should check out her mother in order to determine that she's a ksheira, that he's allowed to marry her, that there's no psul, no mamzerus. And he should check out four generations of mothers back and forth. And this, by the way, is a mission that's very relevant in our modern contemporary life here in the state of Israel, because very often you have people coming from all sorts of countries and they claim that they're Jewish. We have to establish whether they're Jewish or not. The Rabbanut has a whole system of how to check out their genealogy and establish without a shadow of a doubt that they are in fact Jewish. But the Mishnah says, Ein bodkin min ha-mizbeach l'mal. There's one situation in which we don't bother checking, and that is with regard to a Kohen who served and has been serving and continues to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. Because we assume that if one of his forefathers, one of his ancestors was in fact posel, then we would have known about it. The very fact that, you know, over the course of time, decades have gone by, and the man has served in the Beis HaMikdash, they wouldn't have allowed him to serve at the Mizbeach if there was a psul. So again, getting back to this story about the Kohen who said that his portion of the Lechem HaMishnah, of the Lechem HaPonah, was the size of a tail, why did they check him out? We have halacha that anyone who's serving in the Beis HaMikdash, we don't check him out. We assume his genealogy is absolutely reliable, kosher v'yosha. Gemara answers, one answer the Gemara gives is, lo tema shemetz psul. That's not exactly the accurate transmission of this story. Ela ema shachatz psul. In other words, they discovered that he had what's called gasus haruach, a certain kind of vulgar personality, of vulgar traits. And they checked out and they found that his attitude towards kachim was vulgar. He was mevazeh kachi shamayim. And the fact that he compared the lechem aponim to the tail of a lizard, that meant a red bell went off, that let's check out and see whether he's really a gas ruach, he's very vulgar. And this is based on a Gemara Menachos on Daf Yud Ches. The Gemara establishes in Menachos that Kohen she'eino modu b'chol avodos ha-mesuros lebnei Aaron, the Kohen ha-megana b'hem, ein lo chelik b'kuna. He's actually excluded, we invalidate his qualifications to serve in the Beis HaMikdash because of Gassus Ruach. So again, it wasn't a genealogical issue. It wasn't like we found out that he was born to a Grusha, his mother was a divorcee that was married to a Kohen, but rather we checked out his Midos, and we found that his character was such that it was antithetical to the cover that we have to give to Kodshei Shamayim. He was Mevaza Kodshei Shamayim. He was a Gas Ruach. And the very fact that he compared the Lechem Aponim to the Zon of Halatah, that was a red bell. Inami, another way. Iboy Sam, another way of answering this question. You're right that we would not be Bodek Mimizbeach Lamala. We don't go back generations for someone who serves in the Beis HaMikdash. Shani Hossam, although that's the general rule, here's the exception to rule. The Iyu Di Ora Nafshi. If he himself was what we call Marei Cheskasa, he himself, by his very speech, raised the question, raised the eyebrows about his genealogy. In such a case, we will check out his genealogy. If someone else comes along and says, oh, I know that he was this and his mother, blah, 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 then we rely on the chazaka of the Mizbeach. But if he undermines his own chazaka through his speech, his behavior, then we have to really check out his genealogy. Now the Gemara tells another story about how we can tell a person's character by the choice of language. Hahu Arma, there was a guy, Arami is a guy, Davi Solik V'Yochel Psochem Yushalayim, he faked himself out, he disguised himself as a Jew, put on a bud and payas, and he came up in Yushalayim on the Erev Pesach, and he said, give me a portion in the Korban Pesach. He actually joined the Chabura. He was Manui. And they thought he was Jewish. The halach is, as Gemara in Yevamos, that if a person comes and identifies himself as a Jew, we trust him, we believe him that he's Jewish. When he came back from Yerushalayim, back home, Omar, he declared, Ksiv, your Torah says, Zoschukas ha-Pesach kol ben necha lo yochal bo, v'chol orel lo yochal bo, that a non-Jew or a Jew who's an orel is not allowed to eat from the Korban Pesach. I know he was boasting, ha-kachilna mi-shufrei de-shufrei, they get me the best meat of the Paschal lamb. I'm a ben nechar, and I'm also an orel. You know, two strikes against me. Now, this happened in a city which is called Nitzivin. Now, in the city of Nitzivin, there was one of the great giants. He's, by that time in the story, he's an elder gentleman already. And his name was Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, one of the great Tannaim. And when he got the word that this guy was boasting about eating for the Korban Pesach, Amalei, he asked, Amalei Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, he asked him, Mika Safule Me'alya, did they give you from the tail of the lamb, which is Muktar Agav Mizbeach, it has to be burnt on the Mizbeach. He was already trying to set him up for and fool him. Because the guy said, no, they didn't give me that part of the lamb. And Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra knew why they didn't give him part of the lamb, because that part had to be burnt on the Eish and the Mizbeach. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra says to him, come here, my friend. Kisalkis lahasam, when you go back for the next yontu, emalahu sfuli mi'alia, give me from the tail of the lamb. And Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra wanted to be machshel him, so that the Jewish people over there in Yerushalayim would recognize that this guy's a guy. Kisalik, when the guy came up to Yerushalayim, emalahu, he said to the bnei achabura, he was part of a chabura, ma'alia safuli, give me the best part. Amrule Aliyah L'Gavah Salka. The Aliyah is given to Gavah, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, on the Mizbeach. And he thought, what's going on over here? They don't want to give me the best part. They're making up a whole story. Amrule, so they said to him, Mana Amrulech Hachi, did somebody encourage you to ask for the Aliyah? Amalahu, what are you talking about? It was Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra. This is your great leader. He told me that I should ask for the Aliyah. Now they knew something was fishy. Amru, my high to come on. What's going on? How do we understand this? That Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra would have sent this fellow to request the Aliyah. When Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra certainly understood that the Aliyah is burnt on the Mizbeach. Bodku Vasrei, they checked him out. Vashkechua dar Romahu, they found out that he was a guy, Vik Hotlu, and they put him to death. Here we have Machlokas, exactly why they put him to death. Some say that he was actually guilty of theft. Why? Because he was taking Mamon Gavoah, Kodshim belongs to Hashem, and he was stealing from Hashem. And the Rambam writes that Isra Achilas Nochri V'Pesach Mutal Al Yisrael Shelo Yachilenu. The Rambam says that the Isra is on a Jew not to feed the guy. So why is the guy guilty? And he answers Shargu Mishum Shavar Al Isra Gezel Shrei Kodshim Eimomen Gavoa V'lo Zichsa Torah V'Achilasam Ela Es Yisrael V'lo Es HaNochri Nimtza Shegezel Es HaGavoa U'Benoach Nerag Al HaGezel. That's one interpretation. Sholchu Leila Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, after this whole episode, they sent to him Shalom, Shalem, Loch. Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, At bin Itzivin, you're sitting all the way in Itzivin, Umitzodoscha, Prus of Yerushalayim, and yet your net stretches out all the way to Yerushalayim. We were able to capture this big fish, this Nachri, and we established that he was fabricating the truth. Rav Kahana Cholash, he became very weak. This was at the very end of his life. Shadru Rabbanel Rav Yeshua ben Breder of Idi. They sent Rav Yeshua to be their representative, their shliach, to be Mavakir Sachola. Omru Leizil B'dok Madine. tell us what his situation is, come back and report us. Also, unfortunately, I'm at the point of tears. Ashkechei denoch nafshe. When he got there, he found out that Rav Kahana had already expired. Kari levushe, he cut kriya as the Talmud has to cut for his Rebbe. V'ahadre lekriya, but he turned it inside out. He wanted to hide it. He didn't want to tell the Rabbanon that Rav Kahana had died. Ubachi v'yasi, but he was uncontrollably upset and he was crying. When he got back to the Chachamim, Amru le noch nafshe, the Rav Kahana. Did Rav Kahana actually pass away? Amru le anolo kaim. No, I didn't say that. You knew it, but I didn't say it. I wouldn't have let those words out of my mouth because the Pasuk says in Mishlei, Umotzi diba huksil. A person should not speak and convey a besorah ra, a terrible news, out of his mouth. The Gemara tells us another story about Yochan Chakoka, who came from that area, Nafik Likiryasa. He went out to the villages to see what's the situation with the Tvur. They were totally dependent upon the grains and the rains. Ki Asa, when he came back to his city, Amrule, he asked, the people of the city asked him, Chitim Nasu Yafos, tell us some good news, that the wheat is growing properly, will have parnasa. He didn't want to tell him the bad news, so instead, Omer Lehem, he said, Siorim Nasu Yafa, the barley is growing well, and they would understand by process elimination that the wheat was not growing well. He didn't want to tell him explicitly to be a Mavaser Ra, Motzi Rava, Motzi Dibaksia. Omer Leh, they didn't like the fact that he compared the chitim to siorim. Siorim is animal fodder. So they said to him, Tsei uvaser lesusim lechamorim. If you have good news about the barley, go tell it to the horses and the mules. Dechsiv vasiorim vatevel lesusim velarechesh. The pasuk in Tanakh says that barley is designated barley and straw for the animals like the horses and the mules. So the Gemara says, "My havile lemeimar." Why did they get so upset at Yochanan for using that language of Siorin? And the Gemara answers, "You know what he should have said? He should have said Eshtekade last year Nasu Chitim Yafos. Last year the Chitim grew well. We would have understood that this year unfortunately the wheat is not growing well. Inami or alternatively, Adoshim Nasu Yofos. The lentils are growing well. But to mention Siorim, which is animal fodder, that they felt was not the proper use. So this is where we're going to end for today, and in Mitzvah Shem tomorrow, we'll start the next Daf Dalid, Omer Aleph. Just before we close for today, just to wonder when we use and prefer a Lashon Nekiyah, when we prefer a Lashon Ktsara. The Gemara quoted earlier three places in which the Torah was Marech for the sake of Lashon Nekiyah. And apparently the Torah wanted to teach us that a person should always speak Lolem Yisapar on the Lashon Nekiyah if there's no extra Arichus. Other places where the Torah actually uses the word Tame, it's coming to teach us that we should go for Derech Ktsara. So, B'davar Shelo Nemar L'Talmidim, if a person is speaking but not to his Talmidim, he's not passing on the Torah, then he should always choose Lashon Nekiyah, even if it's longer. And the Torah had to teach us this, Dafka, in a place where there is Arichus, because if it would have told us in a place Lashon Nekiyah when there's no Arichus, then we wouldn't understand and prove that the Torah is being makbid about this. Okay, this is where we're going to stop in Mirz Hashem, and tomorrow we'll pick it up on Daf Dalid Omid Aleph.